28th, 2013. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Pope Runyon, and tonight we present a discussion on the 30th path of the Hermetic Kabbalistic Tree of Life. Now, this is the path of Resh and of the Sun, and it's called the Collective Intelligence. It is the first path in which we employ Kusor's Boat, which is a magical device unique to the OTA, derived from ancient Egyptian and Mesopotamian myth sources, and it's also inspired by Abraham Merritt's Ship of Ishtar. Now, the boat enables us to fly over paths already walked in previous astral journeys at the base of the tree. Now, the boat is shown in our pathworking video, which is available to associate members. Again, our text will be Gareth Knight's Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism, Volume 2, and our own Adam's Quest from the Seventh Ray. Now, this path leads from Yesod, the lunar sphere of memory, emotion, and astral foundation, to Hod, the sphere of Mercury, reason, science, and positive solar zodiacal progress. It questions the male and female spiritual perspectives and raises the current debate between techno-industrial progress versus environmental and eco-centered spiritual philosophies, along with collectivism versus individualism. So, tune in and find out about the star people and the earth people, and why the hermetic soul is androgynous. Now, let's get into this with a little bit of introduction about the material that we're going to derive from and cover and whatever. As you know, we are moving our way up the hermetic Kabbalistic tree of life, and we're dealing with the paths, essentially in pathworking mode, and we're also dealing with the spheres, because the paths lead to the spheres. Now, when I say hermetic Kabbalistic, I mean exactly that, because the hermetic tradition has made some additions. I won't say changes, but let's say some very important additions to the symbolism of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. And this main addition that the hermetic philosophers have made to the Tree of Life is the use of the tarot cards and their attribution to the paths which connect the spheres. Now, this is very important to the Hermetic Kabbalah. And the Hermetic Kabbalah, I might mention, is also a good deal more visual than the traditional rabbinical Kabbalah. And the reason for that, of course, is that there is, in Judaism, there is a kind of a prohibition against images, and not entirely, not as much so as in Islam, but to a certain extent, yes. And so consequently, the rabbinical versions of the Tree of Life are less concerned with this mythological imagery, and of course, naturally, they're not concerned with Greco European mythology, because they are primarily biblical and Jewish. And so when you get into the Hermetic Kabbalah, you also are enriched by a whole spectrum of what we would call Greco, Celtic, Nordic mythology, primarily Greek. And this gives the Hermetic Kabbalah a much more colorful, more romantic, and a more balanced, in the sense that it's not all just spiritual. It also involves elemental forces and even considers demonic forces and whatever. It's a more well-rounded approach to philosophy, I think. And quite frankly, the Hermetic Tree of Life, even though the Golden Dawn certainly opted for a clip-off, the Hermetic Tree of Life tends to be more monist, whereas the Rabbinical Tree of Life tends to be dualist in its philosophy. What I mean by that, the difference between the two. Monism is the idea that the universe is a totality of both what we would call good and evil, and whereas dualism postulates the good is only good and brilliantly lighted, and the darkness and the evil is all very, very bad and very, very dark and doesn't smell very good, and it's all very separate. Now, frankly, most Hermetic magicians tend to be more monist, and Neoplatonism, by the way, is a monist philosophy. Hermetic philosophy and Hermetic magic partakes of both philosophies. It has Hermetic philosophy could be said to be have a dualist Gnostic theology coupled with monist Neoplatonic philosophy. And the two are combined. This works out very, very well because there are aspects of dualism which are very practical to spiritual development. A lot of people have problems with this when they get started in Hermetic work. They think, oh my gosh, at just about the time I think that this thing is monist, now it's turning out to be dualist. I don't know where it's at. It's both, absolutely both. And you should study it until you realize what this reconciliation is all about, and realize that both aspects are important to the development process. Now, with that considered, let's talk about the structure a little bit of the Tree of Life and why we need to use this boat. So at the bottom of the Tree of Life, we have Malkuth, which is the kingdom, the physical world in Ashia, where everything takes place. Everything is going to happen. This is the kingdom. This is where it's at. This is where we do it. And then leading down into that through these paths, following the lightning flash, which comes down from the top, and then, of course, we have the snake, which touches all the paths going up, serpent of wisdom. And above Malkuth, we get into what we refer to as the astral plane, the formative world, worlds of formation, which is referred to in Kabbalistic terminology as the Yetzira dimension. Now, we have three paths leading up from Malkuth, from the temple of Malkuth, the physical universe, the magical physical universe. And these three paths, the 29th on the right side, and the 32nd in the middle, and the 31st over there on the left side, leading up to the three lower spheres. And, of course, right down the middle, the lowest sphere is Yesod. And that's where the 32nd path, the universe, goes on up, attributed to Saturn. And it goes on up to Yesod, the lunar sphere, the sphere of the great magic mirror, the sphere of foundation, the sphere of memory, the sphere of emotion, and the very definitely the lunar sphere. And then over on the left-hand side, as you look at it, we have, that's the pillar of severity, supposedly. And we have Hod a little further up. And directly from Malkuth, leading up to their 31st path, and that's the path of fire, and that leads up to Hod, the mercurial sphere. That's number 8, and that's Mercury, and that's the sphere. We're going to be visiting that tonight. That's the sphere of intellect, the sphere of science, the sphere of reason, the sphere of logic, the sphere of engineering, if you will, the sphere of the sciences, and the sphere of logical and incisive mentality. Over on the other side, in the sphere the pillar of mercy, we have Netzach, which is the sphere of nature, and we have that 29th path, the moon leading up to that. That's a water path, and that sphere is the sphere of nature, the sphere of the natural philosophy, the sphere of the goddess, the sphere of beauty and of harmony and of the physical beauty, harmony and equilibrium, but all in a subconscious, subliminal, basic natural way, whereas as opposed to on the other side, we have, of course, Hod, which is the sphere of science and the mind and all this. You could say that one represents the feminine and the other represents the masculine, if you want to say that. Now, we've got these three paths that we can walk, and we go into our path workings, and I think you've all, been with us enough to know what a path working is. Path working is where the path working leader hypnotizes you, gets you all relaxed, hypnotizes you, puts you in a trance, and then he leads you on a symbolic walk along a trail of this path into various attention points and various interesting things that you encounter along the way, all of them properly symbolic and whatever, in which you learn things that are unique to yourself in relation to that path on the way to the sphere. Now, you can walk those lower three paths that we just discussed. Sure, you walk them. And you walk along, and he describes it. It's very vivid. That is, if you've done your homework and you know how to get yourself into trance along with the help of the induction. And it's very vivid, and you learn deep within yourselves about the particular symbols, the traditional symbols that the paths represent. And then you get to the sphere, and you get to experience the particular gifts that sphere has to offer. And so we can walk those lower three paths. We do, and we walk and get the sphere. But what happens now? There's a whole bunch more paths up there and up top, all the way up to the top. That we really, how are we going to get there if we have to walk the path we've already walked and we get to the sphere and then we walk another one? Well, that's a little clumsy. And so we developed, and this is unique to us, some years back, we got the idea that, if we had a boat, kind of a boat that maybe sort of turns into a bird, have an ibis boat, and this boat, we could put this boat up on the altar, and maybe we could put a little simulacrum in it, which is a good idea, and maybe we could light some candles, put it on the boat. We might even put a compass in the boat, kind of carve it to make it look like an ibis with a beak, and it's got wings unfolded on either side, so we could get up, and if we're good enough, we can sit there around the altar, make ourselves real big and make the altar real big and then get our little spirit bodies and hop out and get across the top of the altar and get on the boat. And, of course, by this time, the boat's about 30 feet long. And then the boat would spread its wings and off we'd go and we'd fly through the soul door or we'd fly through the mirror and we would be off. And we could fly all the way over that path or paths that we'd already walked. And then we can land somewhere in the sphere that we'd already done. And then we'd leave the boat there. And then we could walk the new path, the upper path, all by itself, and go and have the same experience, and then come back, and then get on our boat and fly home, back to the Temple of Malkuth. That's the idea. So with that in mind, I started looking around for, the inspiration for this I already had. The inspiration came to some degree from Egyptian solar boats, and they're all familiar with those, boats to take you to the underworld, the netherworld, what have you. But I have to admit that the main inspiration came from Abraham Merritt, the great fantasy writer. And we haven't discussed him before. He would be good for a whole show on the Hermetic Hour, actually, Abraham Merritt. For one thing, he was very, very, very well read in the occult. He knew a lot more about the occult than most science fiction or fantasy writers, and had a lot of depth in his research. And he found in one of the Mesopotamian legends, which I confirm because I finally found where he got it, this boat that's similar to what we're talking about that you could sail the starways with. And he wrote this beautiful fantasy called The Ship of Ishtar. Now, in this fantasy, this archaeologist, this, by the way, came out back in the early 1920s, in this fantasy, the young archaeologist receives a great big block of stone from Mesopotamia, mysterious block of stone, and he meditates on it until it cracks open, and he finds this little miniature ship inside, and with little miniature figures, very, very carefully carved, on the deck, And this ship is sailing on a crystal sea. And one half of the ship is black. And then the front half of the ship is white. And Ishtar's priestess is on the foredeck up in the bow, and she has a little castle up there. And Nergal, the evil god Nergal, and his priest, they have the black part of the boat, and that's back in the stern castle, and that's where they hang out. And the two of them can't get together. And what this all comes down to is that the two of them practiced a sex magic operation back about 4,000 years ago, and they got caught, and this was their punishment. They were, that Ishtar was put in the bow, and Nergal's priest was put in the stern, and they had to go through eternity in this astral sea where they couldn't get to each other. And so what I did was, instead of having the boat divided in the middle, crosswise, I divided it lengthwise, and I had the left side, the severity, that was black, and the right side was white, and then I countercharged the wings, and the wings, of course, were along the thwarts, and then I put a nice little places for candles, so you could put the color of the candles of the color of the sphere you were going to, and then I put a compass in it, and I actually made a wax simulacrum, with the proper effluvium and whatever thing, everything else. And so I put that in there. I had a rudder. I had a tiller. This is beautiful. And like I said, if you're in the associate member program, you look at the pathworking video. At the end of the pathworking video, we show you the boat. So the boat, as I say, it gets up on the altar and it opens its wings and it flies. And it flies through this old door, and it flies to the sphere, and you go on the path. Now, that explains the boat. Now, let's get into this path. This is the first one that we're going to use the boat. And the path is leading from Yasod. That's the sphere of the foundation, the sphere of memory, the sphere of the beginning of the astral plane, the sphere of emotion, and the sphere of the moon. And we're going to go from there. We'll park the boat there, and then we're going to walk the path on over to Hod, which we've already done. We've already walked that path up the 31st path, and so we already know how to get to Hod. But this time we're going to walk the path of the collective intelligence and the path of the sun. Now the tarot card that applies to this path is the card of the sun. And as you recall, this card has a nice friendly sun in the top of it, and there's a little walled garden and two little naked children, boy and a girl, playing in the garden. And there is this wall of stones surrounding them. Now, one of the reasons why the path and is called the collective intelligence, the card relates to it, is because this path represents the universal collective thought or philosophy or whatever you might say in reaching from Yasod, the sphere of memory and emotion, over to the sphere of the sphere of reason and science and whatever. And what's meant by that, of course, is that this is the school solution. This is what everybody is supposed to think. This is what we're all supposed to get together on these ideas. This is a sort of a collective intelligence idea. We might symbolize that, and it has been symbolized in other ways, as a beehive. Bees are very intelligent in the collective. And, of course, I'm not going to get into whether or not the queen bee is smarter than all the rest of the bees. Let's don't go there. But let's say that bees are very, very smart animals, but not individually. They have a collective intelligence. And there is a very, very, very strong human impetus in this direction. In fact, you might say that there is really a divide in human intelligence between between the individual, the person who wants to think for themselves, the person who doesn't accept anything that just on the basis of the fact that most other people believe it. There's a big divide between this, because there is in a number of philosophies, the collective intelligence is considered to be the ideal. Quite frankly, Christianity espouses this. Jesus is telling us that we should be like little children, that we should, he's pictured as the shepherd, and we are the sheep. And the idea is for us all to accept on faith these various pronouncements and what have you. And the same thing would apply to, of course, to Marxism. And in fact, quite frankly, I've made a statement before that Marxism is a Christian heresy, and Marxism couldn't exist without Christianity. There's no way it could. But these are collectivist philosophies, and whereas Hermetic philosophy is very definitely individualistic, the individual in Hermetic philosophy, we say, oh, there are those who have the speech, not the mind, and then there are those of us who have the speech and the mind. And so in this sense, if you want to call us elitist, I suppose that's true. But then on the other hand, we're essentially individuals, and we have a certain pride in our individuality. Now, collectivism, however, is considered to be an ideal, both in Christianity and in Marxism, and it is... in any kind of authoritarian government, collectivism is in a sense promoted, even if they may pay lip service to freedom, individuality, and all that. There's a lot of pressure not to be individualistic. So this is the path of the collective intelligence. Now, what I did in Adamson's Quest, which is my ongoing novel that I've been doing in the seventh ray, we're almost done with the first book on that. We're going to publish it separately, but we just about got it done up to the last chapter. And so pretty shortly, the first book of Adamson's Quest will be coming out separately. But the last two issues of the seventh ray, which, of course, a number of you are familiar with, the last three issues, actually, have chapters of Adamson's Quest. And one of those chapters, back in the Blu-ray, still relates to this particular path. And what I did in Adamson's Quest was I conceived of, to represent this, a community called the College of the Magi. And this community was trying as hard as it could to manage to get to Hoth. That was their goal, of course, being right smack in the middle of the path. Their goal was to train people so they could get to Hoth via the collective intelligence. Well, I didn't realize until recently, but Jack Vance had beaten me to this idea several years before I wrote this. This Charlie's the Magi, that's the thing. Jack Vance had done a story about a civilization on a planet in which the people they weren't exactly nudists, but they didn't care that much about whether they wore clothes or not, but they all wore masks. They didn't want to reveal their faces, and they thought that was the way their culture developed. So I didn't realize Vance had already done that, but I came up with a similar idea with the College of the Magi, in which they decided that they were all going to be nudists, and that way they could get rid of their sexual problems and all of their sexual obsessions and everything. But then the next step was they were all going to be masked, because that way they knew that the face showed emotion and showed character and individuality and expression of hatred and all these various things that resulted in individuality, they could then completely negate by all wearing masks. So they did. So they were all running around in the nude wearing these masks. And this was the College of the Magi. And they thought by doing this, they could achieve collective intelligence, and they could advance themselves, and they would be able to go up the library, and they get up the library in the hall, and they get the secrets of the secrets of the universe and everything, if they could do this. Well, of course, it didn't work, but none of them ever made it. And the reason why they didn't make it was because in order to get up to the university, up to the library at the top of the mesa, as we established in the earlier path, 31st, you have to go up those scales. You have to balance the male and female aspect of your nature. Well, you can't delve into the male or female and or female nature aspect of your nature. You can't get them if you go into this, if you try to achieve androgyny by default. You're not going to be able to deal with the female aspect of yourself or the male aspect of yourself, because you're going to suppress it and deny it, and you're never going to get there. Now, that brings up a point, and this is something I mentioned in the abstract here, we have right now a huge dichotomy, and we've had it. Oh, my gosh, I guess now even the past 100 years or so or more, we've had this big split between what is supposed to be feminist-oriented philosophy of nature and nurture and environment and eco-friendliness and all of this, let's all just get together and don't be competitive and just try to get the most out of a simple life and all this kind of this. For the past 100 years or so, we've had this, and it's been attributed to feminism, and feminism has locked onto it, or at least is that aspect of it. And conversely, that has gone up against the Industrial Revolution idea of more technology, more engineering, more to solve all our problems through chemistry. We'll plow up everything and cover the whole world in concrete, and we'll have a lot of fun wearing respirators. No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we, how many resources we deplete. We're going to go to the moon anyway, and we'll deplete that too. And on and on and on. Let's build. It doesn't matter what we build. Let's just keep building and keep going and better and better technology and all of that. That's the that's supposedly the masculine attitude. Nature exists only for us to exploit it. And to improve it and to overcome it. And that's supposed to be the male or patriarchal aspect. Well, actually, if we want to really look solidly and sensibly at this, that is, both of these propositions are true except for one big, huge thing that they have not considered, and this is the reason why in our College of the Magi, why these masked nudists never managed to get up to the library. And the reason is that we, male men and women, are not just men and women. I don't care how much testosterone you have, and I don't care how much hair you got in your chest. You've got a little girl inside you, boy. Yeah. And she's a pretty hot little number, too. And she's in there, and she's part of you. And the same thing with you gals that, you think you're such hotshot feminists. You got a guy in there. In fact, sometimes I think that these feminists, the louder they shout, I think the more male aspect they have in them. So we are, as we say in our introductory poem that we use for the first degree. There is that which in man which is womanly, and that which in woman which is manly. So all tools should be thine in tasks of the art. All right, that's one of the big secrets. Now, that brings us to something else which Gareth Knight gets into in this. By the way, I cannot recommend The Practical Guide to Capitalistic Symbolism highly enough. Now, some of it is a little dated. In the sense, he's not quite as tolerant of some things that we're more politically correct about today. But then, you know, he's British, you know, yes. But even so, if you can, some of you could kind of grit your teeth over some of that. But, Gareth Knight's Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism is really something you ought to read. Now, what Basil Wilby, that was his name, what Basil points out here is, in relation to this particular thing that we're talking about, collective intelligence. See, this collective intelligence, it does relate more to this feminist proposition. Now, does this get exploited by bad people? You bet it does. The communists, the Bolsheviks even, they were very interested in Bakhofen, the anthropologist who said that there was a real matriarchy in the ancient days, which there never was really, but they were pushing Bakhofen because they thought that feminism, that this kind of political feminism would be very commiserate with and supportive of Marxist philosophy, Marxist collectivism. Yeah, and this is one that's really going to throw you. Rudolf Sobotendorf, the Nazi philosopher who founded the Thule Group, which was the esoteric core of budding Nazism, he even adopted feminism for a while because he thought it would serve the purposes of a collectivist tyranny. Okay? So even this sweet, a sweet, peaceful wonder. Oh, don't get the idea that we can't have evil on the side of peace, love, and sisterhood. Yeah, we can. And also, one of the things that we should understand is that coming down from the biblical Genesis and the philosophy of the Garden of Eden, so to speak, we have this idea that women are creatures of the earth and men are coming down from the stars, and that women don't have souls. And only the man has the soul because he comes down from the stars, and a woman is a creature of the earth. Now, you don't hear very much of this anymore because it really does stick in people's craws these days, and I don't blame it because it's wrong. Now, we all come from originally. We have a part of us that comes from the stars. All of us. Doesn't matter whether you're male or female. The reason for that is that I don't know about you guys, but I've had a couple of previous incarnations as a lady, and I rather enjoyed it. And so the soul is androgynous. At least that is the Hermetic tradition. The soul is androgynous. Now, therefore, this idea, and unfortunately, Crowley bought into this idea that women didn't have souls, I don't mean to say that OTO philosophy these days reflects that. It doesn't, but Crowley certainly, that was his take. And that so what you have here is a very militantly patriarchal, grossly paternal philosophy where women are really soulless, moralless creatures of the earth. And that still has an influence. It still has that idea still has an influence in fundamental biblical religion. And when I say fundamental biblical religion, I'm not referring just to Islam. I'm also referring to the other two biblical Abrahamic religions. You still find this attitude that women are creatures, amoral creatures of the earth, and they don't have souls. And only the boys have souls. Only the men have souls. We're the ones that come in. Now, frankly, if this is something you don't like, I don't blame you. I don't like it either. But it's not a part of Hermetic philosophy, and it never has been. So we get into that, and that aspect, the difference will be dealt with on this path. And the reason why, as I say, the reason why my College of the Magi, and of course that was my thing for Adam's Quest. I don't want to say that that was anything Basil came up with or anything, that's traditionally on the path. But I thought it represented the situation rather well. Collective intelligence. The collective intelligence, unfortunately, doesn't consider the differentiation of the individual. See, this is the problem with the whole collective intelligence idea. This is why, and I'm going to wax political here for a moment, the best form of government we have ever come up with on this planet and probably on any other is one of the oldest forms of government on the planet, and that's the Republic. And it's very, very old. Now, 400 years ago, Niccolo Machiavelli, who is infamous for the Prince, but nobody reads his discourses. He was a Republican, by the way. He wrote the Prince basically because Cesare Borgia, his patron at the time, wanted a handbook on how to be a tyrant, and so Niccolo wrote one for him, which for a long time was on everybody, all the politicians supposedly had a copy of Niccolo Machiavelli's The Prince on their bedstand. Now I think they read Asimov's Foundation, but it used to be The Prince. Anyway, the Machiavelli in the discourses said that every 200 years a republic has to reaffirm its original principles, because it carries within it the seeds of its own destruction. And if it does not reaffirm its original principles every 200 years, it will become a tyranny. Now, that's 400 years ago he wrote that. And we're seeing that right now. I mean, and of course, it happened to Rome, and it just happened over and over and over again. But the Republic gives a chance. It breaks the mold of this urge toward collective intelligence, which suppresses the individual. Collective intelligence always suppresses the individual. Now, one of the things that we're noticing right now, last night on the Science Fiction Channel, Joe Rogan had this wonderful show, but it was disturbing, very disturbing, on the new merging with computers and human immortality by the year 2045. And we're all going, according to all of the people he interviewed, including a Russian billionaire who is sponsoring this 2045 project, that we're all going to merge with our computers, and we are going to become immortal cyber beings. We're going to transfer our consciousness to computers. I don't think so, because consciousness, with all of the memories of not just this like this, but all the lifetimes, as Socrates said, we don't learn, we just remember. All of that has an affinity with the organic, not with the inorganic. And consequently, in order to have the subtlety of individuality, in order to have a place for the soul, I think we need to look, if we want Superman, I think we need to look toward genetic engineering, and I think we need to look toward organic computers, if you will. At least they need to be organic, and we need to create organic Superman if we're going to do that, in order to do this. Now, curiously enough, Joe Rogan didn't deal with the organic at all, except that the idea of putting nanocomputer chips into the brain to gradually transform us into total computers. He did go that far. So the collective intelligence, I think the collective intelligence is kind of happy with the idea of seeing if they can actually transfer human consciousness to a cyborg, and they will have, what they'll end up with is a soulless machine that's a replica of them, which will be in a sense immortal unless somebody blows it up. But quite frankly, this may appeal to a sociopath, but then on the other hand, I'm beginning to wonder. In fact, Rogan mentioned on the show that this was somewhat sociopathic. He used the term psychopath, but that's because the term sociopath is not popular these days. The reason why it's not popular is we have too many people who are. We got more and more of them all the time. So they prefer the term psychopath because that gives them a little distance from what they really are. And, yeah, a sociopath is an empty, almost a soulless individual. And so they would go for this sort of thing. I think the organic, but, however, secret work in the organic area along this line, genetic engineering and everything, that's going on at the same pace, and we don't talk about that, do we? Oh, so there's a whole area there that Joe Rogan could do a story on. Anyway, this is the big thing, that aspect of this path, and you, a person taking it, needs to look at the idea that the sun, the light, that this whole aspect of merging with the universal mind is an aspect of collective intelligence. Here, I would suggest if you think that this is just wonderful to become a worker bee, a human worker bee in a wonderful, happy hive, if you think that and eventually just merge with the great swarm of bees in the sky or whatever it is, if you think that that's the ideal, then I have a suggestion for you. I suggest that you read Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End. And when you see where this goes in the end, and Clarke describes it horrifically, ask yourself, do you really want that? Human beings, the reason why we have fallen angels, of course, and we are the fallen angels, or at least some of us are, is that the angels wanted to enjoy life. They wanted to enjoy sex. They wanted to enjoy love. They wanted to enjoy a good dinner. They wanted to enjoy a good fight. They wanted to enjoy. They wanted to live. That's why they rebelled. They came down and said, hey, God, we want to go down and enjoy some of this stuff that you're giving to the people. We want to enjoy it. They're having fun, and we want to have fun too, and we want to have, and of course we have, along with fun, you have to have suffering too, but we want to live, and they did, and that was the rebellion. Okay, well, sure, we go toward the light, sure, we want to serve God, we want to go toward the light, we want to be human beings, or don't want to kill each other, we want to get along, we want to do, but we also want to realize our potential. We want to do what we want to enjoy the savor of life. We want to do what it is we feel we're here to do. And we don't want to just lay back and say, oh, well, whatever is good for everybody's good for me. And I just want to, that's not life. So the idea here is just a question. Question. Yeah, sure. You can take this ultimate plunge into the collectivist peaceful very gentle way if you want to. That's fine. That's your choice. But you should have a choice. You should have a choice because this life is where you do it. You are here to do what you're here to do. And if you feel that you want to do something, then you should do it. Now, well, providing it's not going to, you know, hurt anybody without cause, you shouldn't do it. We can still have morality, and you can still have honesty, and you can still have pride, you can still have honor, and you can still do stuff. And you can still put up a good fight if you have to. Now, that is really what I think life is all about. But you got to question it on this path. You have to question whether or not I just want to go to the light. More light, more light, more light. Well, that's fine. We say that in masonry all the time. More light. Yeah. Follow the light. But don't be too quick to get there. Now, what I want to point out about our Tibetan Buddhist friends is, oh, yeah, they make a big thing out of, oh, we just have nirvana, and isn't it wonderful to just be off of this wheel and just blend with the blend with the universe, but at the same time, these same people are telling you over and over and over again how precious this life is, and they are taking one bodhisattva vow after another. And by the time they finally do transition, they got so many bodhisattva vows. Now, if they really want to just blend with the infinite, what about all these bodhisattva vows? Why are they taking them? Why? Because they like life too. And so therefore, we keep moving toward the light, but we keep realizing that life is what we're here to do. And with that, I think these questions need to be asked, and they need to be asked on this path. You need to understand what it's going to take for you to reconcile the conflicts between the feminine side of your nature and the masculine side of your nature, and have room for both, and have an understanding of both, and have an appreciation that even if you are a person who simply wants to find peace and love and universal brotherhood and not to get to cause any problems and just to be a nice, comfortable, happy person. If that's what you want, fine. But don't feel guilty if that's not what you want. Just maintain your good moral compass and be aware that our eventual goal eventually is return to the light, but we probably have a long way to go and a lot of fun and a lot of challenge and a lot of drama and a lot of excitement before we get there. And these are the things that I think we need to look at on this path. And now, before anybody misconstrues what I'm saying as some sort of justification for the so-called left-hand path or the so-called dark side, no, I'm not at all. Magic is not black, it is not white, and it's not gray. Magic is all the colors of the spectrum. And a monist hermetic tree of life has what we call good, it has what we call evil, it has all of the aspects in it. And it is not, there is no such thing in the hermetic tradition as detaching yourself from the real world so that you can just contemplate endless goodness. This is not where the hermetic tradition is, and this is not what it's all about. This is here again, the path of Resh and the path of the sun called the collective intelligence. It's the path between Yesod and Hod. Hod, of course, being the universal library and science and reason and everything. And Yesod back there being the sphere of memory, the sphere of the astral lunar sphere, the sphere of the subconscious and the emotions and all. And so we have two approaches to this: the individual quester, and the person seeking the comfortable aspect of the so-called collective intelligence. So those are the two things we have to deal with on this path. Now, next week we are going to go over to the other side of Yesod. Take the boat again. We'll go over to the other side of Yesod. And we will take the 28th path, and that is leads from Yesod to Netzach, the sphere of nature, the sphere of the goddess, the sphere of natural philosophy, and all of that. And in a sense, had a somewhat opposite approach to what we did on this path, and that's the path of the star, by the way. And you'll recall that Crowley switched the star with the emperor, but we're still staying with the regular, the regular standard human star in that path. So another exciting adventure on the paths, and meanwhile, stay warm and dry, and we'll see you next week, and good magic.